This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
NBA Finals, game number 5 coming up tonight. Warriors and Raptors, and we have certainly arrived at the point of no return for Golden State, the two-time champs on the ropes, and joining us, host on the Warriors flagship, 95.7 The Game, Matt Kolsky, nice enough to spend a little time with us. Matt, first of all, Kevin Durant, I mean, planning to play, I guess that is going to at least give everybody in Golden State and the Bay Area charge and some hope here, right?
Yeah, you'd certainly think so. I mean, I think if we've learned anything, we've learned how hard a job this was without Kevin Durant. And even though we don't know what exactly we'll get out of him, just the fact that he'll be out there, it has to mean something.
Matt, I mean, at least people out here in San Diego, and I'm sure many folks who are outside of Oakland right now, haven't got a chance to see much of anything from Kevin Durant. Now, you guys who are a little bit closer may have. How healthy should we expect him to be for this Game 5?
You know, frankly, I wish I had great inside information. This has been as closely guarded a secret as I can remember. And the Warriors are, I don't want to say they're generally forthcoming about injuries, but they're not usually quite as secretive as this has been. The weird sort of closed-door workout they suddenly had the other night that people were speculating involved Durant. Now, I had some peekers on that workout, and I don't think he was out there, so that may have just been a misdirect. It's hard to see what's going on. I'll say this. He's clearly not 100%.
Okay.
Because in my mind, any notion of, oh, well, he's playing both sides against the middle, he might be delaying because of the free agency, all that stuff is total BS in my mind. I feel like I've gotten to know Kevin Durant enough in 3 years that this is not the sort of dude, and frankly, you don't become someone like Kevin Durant being the sort of dude who would sit out an opportunity to win a title.
Yeah.
It's just not, it doesn't make sense to me that would be part of his DNA. So I believe he is getting on the floor at the earliest possible opportunity, which in turn means he is not feeling great. But he's feeling good enough to move around and probably at least take some jumpers. And correct me if I'm wrong, you guys have watched the series. I feel like even just a 7-foot standstill jump shooter would help the Warriors right now.
I agree. They seem to be missing. I just think the spacing is going to be different with him on the floor. So it's going to be interesting in this Game 5 for sure.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Kevin Durant got a ton of flack in the last, like, 15 games of the regular season. There was an 11-game stretch, and I've pulled up the stats a number of times. I don't have them in front of me right now, but I've looked at them enough to know he shot 59% and averaged about 12 shots a game, and I think over 7 assists. And he got a lot of guff from national and local reporters. Hey, why aren't you shooting more? Is something wrong? Are you angry at somebody? Like, is this about free agency? How come you're not shooting? And as he always does, Kevin Durant would say, well, you know, I just sort of let the game come to me, and I do whatever my team needs on a night-to-night basis. But nobody really believed him. Everyone was sure he was deliberately shooting less. And I kind of always thought he was. Now, look, he was clearly going out of his way to fit within the team concept, because the guy who shoots 20 times a game doesn't suddenly just shoot at 12 for no reason. But it felt pretty honorable to me. And I think if you can get that Kevin Durant tonight, the 12 to 15 shots, but over 50% of them going in, moving the ball, participating in the offense, and being a threat, I think that's enough to get it done, at least in Game 5.
And you would think so, because they're going to have to guard him. I mean, that's the thing that I see, and that's going to have to open things up for the other guys a little bit.
That sounds like a guy that's trying to get his teammates ready and make sure they're good and comfortable before the playoffs start, is what that sounded like.
That sounded like that's exactly it. Matt Kolsky is with us. Host of the Warriors flagship, 95.7 The Game. You know, the thing is, in our sports world here, we tend to always wonder what's wrong with the champion when the champion is losing. we don't really take enough time to give credit to the other team that happens to be beating the champion. And I'm sure the Warriors are certainly not at their best. They're not 100% healthy. We've all seen them play much better. But how much of this is stuff Toronto's doing that the Warriors just aren't dealing with very well? I mean, look, they beat them twice in the regular season. I think most people thought that didn't mean anything, but now you add it all up and that's 5 of 6 overall. There must be something this Toronto team's doing right.
Yeah, I still don't think the regular season means anything just because those were pretty different teams on both sides due to injuries. And look, the Raptors made some pretty significant roster changes.
Yeah, they did.
But I do think the 3-1 means a lot. And I think it more than anything about the Warriors, I think it has been about the Raptors. I was just talking to my co-host a few minutes ago about this. One of our things over the last 3 years, certainly, since Durant showed up, is sort of when we project a series in particular, but just the season overall, you kind of count all-stars because there's so damn many of them on this roster. You know, it seems ridiculous. And any time there was a little doubt or why aren't they playing better or what's gone wrong here, it was, look, at the end of the day, they got 4 or 5 all-stars. The other guys don't. And I think when you get to a place like the NBA Finals, you have to look at that not in terms of who's got an all-star selection from a few months or even a few years ago, but in terms of who's playing like an all-star right now. And in this series, the Raptors have had more guys playing like all-stars every single game.
Good point.
Every game. Steph Curry is, and even he hasn't been perfect, but he's pretty much been all-star for 4 games. You can't say that about anybody else. Kevin Durant's been off the floor entirely. Klay Thompson's been off the floor and is somewhat hurt, although he didn't look too bad. Draymond Green has had 1 or 2 pretty big stinkers in this series, and DeMarcus Cousins is nowhere near his all-star level. Andre Iguodala is nowhere near his all-star level. Like, the all-star count favors the opposition for the first time in a while if you just look at how guys are playing, because you've got, obviously, Kawhi being ridiculous, but Marc Gasol has had a couple all-star level performances. Pascal Siakam has played like an all-star. Kyle Lowry, Fred VanVleet has played almost like an all-star in this series. And you know, you run down Toronto's roster, they're playing 6 or 7 or at most 8 guys. All of them can shoot. All of them can defend. This is a really good basketball team.
Yeah, man, you make a terrific point because Toronto does have a bunch of guys playing like all-stars. I want to ask you, you brought up Klay Thompson. I mean, he looked pretty good, at least from my standpoint, in Game 4 after missing Game 3. Where is he at percentage-wise as far as health? Is he close to 100? Or I would imagine he's not. I mean, hamstrings don't heal all that fast.
Yeah, I mean, you know much more about competing at a high level than I do. And hamstring, boy, I've strained a hamstring playing adult softball, and that took me out for a month.
Right. So, only a month? That's good.
Yeah. Well, I was 35 at the time. You know, I was still feeling okay. But no, Klay is the hardest to tell. You know, some guys, they're missing the 10 or 15% physically. You can see it. He's obviously missing at least that much. And I don't know where it shows up. I mean, I tell people a lot around here because I'm a Chicagoland native. I just work here. My teams in my heart are mostly Chicago teams, but I've become a decent Warrior fan mostly because of my love for Klay Thompson.
Yeah.
I just have so much respect for the guy. You never know when he's hurt, unless in the rare cases he misses some time, but when he comes back, he looks the same. And he's still got a knockdown jumper. And look, he's a guy, some nights he's not going to hit. And he obviously had a big slump to start the year, and that'll happen occasionally. But he sure seems to be hot when they need him. And to come back, even though they lost Game 4, to come back when you're clearly not okay and hit some of the shots he hit, I just think it's remarkable. Not to mention he is being asked to defend one of the, what, 2, 3 best players in the league on a regular basis?
And that player is given the Warriors a lot of problems at the other end of the floor too, because they put Kawhi on Draymond Green once in a while, and much of the time, or at least early in the series. And both Tony and I feel like Draymond Green is kind of the head of the Warriors snake, even when everybody's healthy. Everything has to kind of go mentally and physically through him, and how he plays kind of rubs off on the rest of the team.
Your heartbeat.
The heartbeat. Thank you, Tony. And it just seems like, Kawhi Leonard's taken a little of his heartbeat away, and the Raptors have taken a little of that away. I'm stunned because I didn't think anybody could do that to Draymond Green.
Yeah, well, you know, usually when we think about a player having their, you know, sort of heart taken away a little bit or being really shut down, it has to do with getting their scoring stopped.
Right.
And I think, you know, Draymond is not a scorer, and so it's a different thing. But he, two things. First of all, the first part you said is 100% right. He's the heartbeat, and what that really means is the old basketball adage, defense wins championships, right? And look, you have to have offense too. We don't need to get into that particular argument, but the Warriors, at least I can say factually, they are the unbeatable Warriors when they defend at a high level.
Yeah.
And sometimes when they're able to defend at a high level and at least have the personnel to do so, they can actually struggle on offense and still be that juggernaut. When they don't play defense, they're totally vulnerable. And Draymond Green, specifically his energy, is the key to a complete defensive effort.
Right.
No matter what people say, it's just hard to play good defense for 48 minutes in the NBA. It's a really hard job. It requires incredible focus and energy and intensity. And Draymond keys all that stuff, and when it's not there, they can give up 120 to a Toronto Raptors team that isn't known for its offense. And I think in terms of the Kawhi matchup, your second point, what Kawhi, and not even just Kawhi, it's a team effort.
Yeah.
Siakam and Gasol are a huge part of it, too. But all the little clever things that Draymond does, catching at the foul line, sort of moving downhill, finding guys in with lobs, all of that is it's creative offensively, and the Raptors have done such a good job of snuffing it out. How many lobs have they tipped in the last few games that against the Rockets were huge dunks for the Warriors?
A bunch.
And that stuff, I think, matters even more than the 2 points because it's a momentum shifter as well.
Well said, Matt. Well, I tell you one thing. If nothing else, it's a fascinating night to watch a basketball game because I don't think anybody knows exactly how this one's going to go tonight. Maybe Kevin Durant rides in on his white horse, saves the Warriors, and they go on and win another championship. Maybe it's time for Toronto. I don't know. I'll still have to see it to believe it. But
Chris. The biggest thing to me, and I tweeted this after the last game. Now I'm the radio guy who tells you what I tweeted. But
it's all right.
It would have been a real shame for this thing to end without KD getting out there at least once. And, you know, we'll see how good he is. Hopefully he's really good. Because I just think that injury has robbed us of what, you know, before the series, I might not have thought this. I might have thought that the KD injury made it more competitive. But now that I've seen what Toronto's able to do in this matchup, I feel like KD being hurt robbed us of one of the great finals matchups ever.
You might be right.
I agree.
This Toronto team has really, really showed how good it is. Nick Nurse has done a great job coaching this team against Steve Kerr also. All right, Matt, you got to go to work. You got to pregame. You got to get ready. We appreciate the time so much down here, and hopefully we'll have a chance to catch up a little later, and the series will keep going.
Thanks, Matt. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, guys. Anytime.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Big five.
Sometimes there's just not enough time in the day to talk all the sports we want.
I feel reborn. I'm like a phoenix.
Settle in and saddle up. The Big Five starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
Before we get into it, I saw one of the most horrific injuries in baseball history happen on Friday.
Don't tell Tony these. He doesn't like to hear these.
Did you see what happened? Why Mitch Haniger is on the 10-day IL?
Yes.
Oh. I didn't see it, but that's it. Fine.
A ruptured.
Never mind. He doesn't.
Testicle.
He does not. Well, he does, but
that's going to take more than 10 days to heal.
You don't want to put him on a 60-day because then you can't go back. You could always put him on a 10 and let him go 15
Ease
or 16.
Up to the 60.
Right.
Brett Gardner's injury the other day? That was better than Mitch Haniger's, because Mitch Haniger didn't do it intentionally to himself.
You know what, though? I hate to say this, but Brett got what he deserved.
Yeah.
You slam helmets near your team, because that helmet could have easily ricocheted
and
to its left
else.
And hit one of his teammates.
But it hit him in the face.
It hit him in the face. And he had no choice but to wear it and pretend like it didn't hurt, like six stitches in his lip wasn't going
to
feel.
He had to walk the length of the dugout,
and the camera
was right on his face.
He had to play it
and
off.
Blood was pouring out of his mouth, and he had to make it pretend like it
and
didn't hurt.
After the game, he said, I will never throw a helmet again. Yeah, I bet.
Next day, though, he hit like a...
I've seen
run like 9 miles, didn't he?
I've seen coaches concussed from a player slamming his helmet. I remember when I was little, Benito Santiago slammed his helmet, and it hit Greg Riddock in the head.
Well, there's a lot of teams
that made him sleep in the clubhouse at night because they wouldn't let him drive home because he had a concussion.
Wow,
that is crazy.
There's a lot of teams, if I'm not mistaken, Tony, you know more than I do, but that actually have punching bags.
Yes.
Just right down the walkway.
Milwaukee has one, as a matter of fact.
So that frustrated players can just go bash the punching bag.
That's awesome.
Instead of beating up something else or hurting themselves.
Franmil broke a bat the other day after that bat. I can't remember if that was on Friday or on Saturday, but I remember him breaking one.
Over his knee?
No, he hit it on the ground and broke.
Oh, yeah, after
and
he struck out with runners in scoring position. Turned around.
That was a scary man. But Mitch Haniger, I'm so sorry.
All right, don't do that again. Don't say
that
again.
We're good. We get it.
It's bad.
You know?
Every Getty that's driving home right now.
Rest in peace, Mitch Haniger.
Listeners. All the Pirates and the Braves are having some fisticuffs. Ooh, our San Diego native, too.
Musgrove.
Joe Musgrove's on the mound. Joe Musgrove getting involved. All right, we'll keep an eye on that.
But Mitch Haniger, I'm sorry, buddy.
Number five.
Twitter was set on fire yesterday after one celebrity challenged another celebrity to a fight. That's right, a good old-fashioned celebrity MMA match. The challenger was none other than this guy, Justin Bieber. But the person he is challenging is a little strange. He randomly wrote on Twitter last night, quote, I want to challenge Tom Cruise to fight in the octagon. Tom, if you don't take this fight, you're scared and you will never live it down. Who is willing to put on the fight? And then he tags Dana White. This spread like crazy and a lot of people were commenting on it, including Conor McGregor, who said on Twitter, if Tom Cruise is man enough to accept this challenge, McGregor Sports Entertainment will host the bout. Does Cruise have the sprouts to fight like he does in the movies? Stay tuned to find out, end quote. So now someone you are all very familiar with and love is not afraid of Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise? I could beat up Tom Cruise.
Mr. Uncle Teddy! Uncle Teddy said that on the broadcast one time and Thomas reminded me, and it's amazing. So Tom Cruise, if you run into Uncle Teddy, I mean, you're going to get this guy.
Tom Cruise? I could beat up Tom Cruise.
Anyway, so Justin Bieber challenged Tom Cruise, and no one knows why he challenged him to a fight.
So if Tom Cruise beats Justin Bieber, is Teddy next?
I guess so. We're going to have to make that happen somehow. All right, so my question is a two-parter, and it's going to start with our favorite guy here who loves Justin Bieber, Chris. A, would you want to see this fight? And B, who would win in a fight between Justin Bieber and Tom Cruise?
Can I go with C?
No. There's no C.
Because my C is if I was Tom Cruise, I would just like, you got to be kidding me, and just move right away from this. On to the next.
Justin Bieber
is
a big star.
56 years old. And I going into an octagon fighting some stupid pop star kid. I would just ignore this 100%. But Ted, by the way, is right. He could beat up Tom Cruise.
Because
Tom
Cruise
is only like 5'7", and that's what he's listed at.
He's got the height advantage, for sure.
He's not even that tall, from what I'm told. He's just a little tiny drink of water. But Tom Cruise ought to just tell Justin Bieber to take a walk. I know it wasn't one of my choices, but that's what I'm going
that's
with.
That's fine. Tony, what do you think? Would you want to watch this fight, and who would win?
No, I wouldn't want to watch this at all.
Really? This doesn't interest
you? Honestly,
you?
I don't really care who wins.
Would you like to see Clint Hurdle and Kevin Durant act in a movie? I mean,
sure.
No, you wouldn't.
I saw LeBron in Trainwreck, and he was great.
Oh, my goodness. People just stick to what you do.
I'm not the only one who wants
and
this Justin fight to happen.
Justin Bieber isn't that good of a singer anyway.
Hey!
Keep working on his singing. He's got a ways to go there.
All right, let's move
I can't
on.
Get on board with that.
Let's
I like on. Justin. That's
number four.
Thank you. That's not where I thought you were going, but okay.
I like Tom Cruise as an actor, but I don't like him
I like
fighting
him in,
Justin
yeah,
Bieber.
Yeah, exactly. I like them to stay in their respective realms.
Do you think Tom Cruise was just sitting on his couch and he gets a tweet and he's like, what the heck, Justin Bieber?
Didn't even hear about it until this morning.
All right.
Who's older, Tom Cruise or Brad Pitt?
Brad Pitt.
Thomas, who's older?
Tom Cruise.
Scrappy, break the tie.
I'm going to say Brad Pitt because you're asking the question.
Tom Cruise is older.
Oh, dang it. All right.
Thomas
Number four. After getting smoked by Duke 18-5 in Game 1, we talked about a little bit earlier of its Super Regional Series in the NCAA Tournament, Vanderbilt was on the verge of being eliminated, but with the season on the line, the Commodores called up freshman pitcher Kumar Rocker to start Game 2, and it was a tall order for the 19-year-old, but he responded by pitching what some are already calling the greatest performance in college baseball history. Rocker struck out 19 batters, one for every year of his life, and did not give up a single hit. It's the first no-hitter in the Super Regionals history and just the eighth in NCAA tournament history. It's also the first for the school Vanderbilt in 48 years. Tony, is this the best performance in college baseball history?
Sure.
Let me ask you this real quick before he answers. You said he was brought up.
Where did
they bring him up from?
From the JV?
I don't remember saying brought up, but sure.
Oh, you said it.
Definitely said
it. You said it, Kirby Raitt.
Well, no, he wasn't brought up. He was brought in. How
okay.
about that?
Thank you.
All right.
Is it the... he surpassed Price. Why can't I remember his first name? David Price had that record prior to him. So, yeah, sure. It's been the best performance at that point.
All right, Chris.
I'm going to say yes. He's 19 years old. He's a freshman. This is a pretty impressive game. 19 strikeouts and a no-hitter in a super regional facing elimination.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, we're going to do our greatest elimination games on our countdown later on, mm-hmm. since the Warriors are facing that tonight. But I do want to... I did a little research on this question just because that's what a good talk show host should do.
Okay.
And I do want to at least give runner-up status here to Buddy Schultz.
Old Buddy. What Buddy
for
do?
For Miami, Ohio University against Wright State. 46 years ago, Old Buddy did not pitch a no-hitter against Wright State. However, in a 9-inning complete game, he struck out 26.
Oh, wow.
Wowee.
The only guy he didn't strike out bunted and popped it back up to him at the mound.
That is crazy.
That's a pretty great performance, I must say.
That might be the best one.
I don't know. I mean, it was a regular season game against Wright State. Buddy Schultz said, look, there's a little story about it here. That's why I'm reading it. Or have the information. But he said, you know, there's been people who have thrown no-hitters in perfect games. He goes, but nobody's probably going to break my record. Because the only way you can break it is to strike out all 27. Strasburg got 23 one night against Utah when he was at San Diego State.
Only reason why I didn't put it ahead was because of where it was. I mean, it's in a regional, a super regional
right.
at that. So
that's right.
It's
that's
a big
right.
deal.
Being in a super regional, no-hitter, 19, that's why that's probably going to be the winner.
Watching the game yesterday, I kept seeing highlights of Steven Strasburg in an Aztec uniform. And every single time, I said to myself, hey, struck him out! In the Chris voice. Strasburg strikes him out! No hitter, see? Steven Strasburg!
For
the Brooklyn Robins. We work way too much together.
Yeah.
We're
a little crazy.
All right, we're skipping number three in the interest of time. I know you guys hate that, but we have to.
I do hate
number
that.
Two.
We have to. It's not that good. Okay, I'll ask you real quick. Jadeveon Clowney. He is set to be franchise tag for $16 million, but the Texans have no GM. Is that a big problem for you, Chris?
What, that they have no GM?
Yeah, and you're trying to negotiate your contract.
So if you're making me Jadeveon Clowney,
yes.
I might wait at least until they get a GM in place before I sign up.
So you're going to franchise tag yourself and then wait for a deal?
No, I'm going to wait for the new GM to see if they want to still franchise tag me, because most guys don't want to be franchise tagged.
It's true. That's what he doesn't want to be. Tony?
So I'm assuming if I wait for the next guy, maybe he won't.
Are you mad if you're Jadeveon Clowney and they don't have a GM, the Texans, and you're trying to negotiate a new contract?
It does make it a little bit more difficult to get the kind of deal I'm looking for if you don't have a GM. But I guess the owners could... The ownership could be handling it. I don't know. I'd be a little frustrated probably, especially if you franchise tag me, because now I'm just stuck with it until you get somebody in place that we can actually have a negotiation with.
All right, number two. The greats of tennis are still winning the big titles and appear not to be slowing down anytime soon. Rafael Nadal won the 12th French Open title of his career and his 18th Grand Slam trophy after beating Dominic Thiem. I hope I probably didn't pronounce that
you
right.
You didn't?
Thiem?
Team.
Team. 3-1 on Sunday. When asked to compare himself to Roger Federer, Roger Federer has 20 Grand Slam titles. Nadal said comparing himself to Roger Federer is like a neighbor who casts envious looks at the bigger house, TV, or better garden next door. That's what Nadal said about comparing him to Roger Federer. Tony, do you
wait, give me that part again about
what he said.
He said that comparing him to Roger Federer is like a neighbor who casts envious looks at the bigger house, TV, or better garden next door. So, Tony, do you think the gap is as big as Nadal thinks it is?
Yeah, I do.
Really?
Actually, I do.
Okay.
Federer has been dominant. When he was in his prime, when he was at his best, he was dominant everywhere. Nadal's only really had success, like consistent success, at the French. He's won a couple other tournaments too, but...
Good point.
Federer was he went wherever there was a major, he was going there to win it, pretty much
on hard court, on clay,
on
grass.
Didn't matter. He was tough to beat everywhere.
He was.
Chris, what do you think? You're a tennis guy.
I am a little more of a tennis guy probably than Tony, and I've actually looked this all up. Federer does only have one championship on clay, so that's one place he really hasn't been successful.
Right.
But he has 13 of his 20. Are either Wimbledon or the U.S. Open. And those are the two biggies. And whereas Nadal has 12 of his 18 in the French. But he has won them all, Nadal. Yep. And head-to-head, when they were both as close as they could be to their prime, Nadal beat Federer more times than Federer beat Nadal. Straight up in Grand Slam matches. Even at Wimbledon, he beat him in the finals a couple of times.
I did not know that.
And if you look up their all-time record, I think Nadal is ahead by a reasonable amount.
So
my point is that there's very little gap between the two, and there's room on the greatest ledger for both of them, because I think they both belong on there.
Okay. Let's get to the last one. That's a good answer, both of you guys.
Number one.
Longtime point guard of the San Antonio Spurs, Tony Parker, announced his retirement from basketball on Twitter. He said, quote, "It's with a lot of emotion that I retire from basketball. It was an incredible journey. Even in my wildest dreams, I never thought I would live all those unbelievable moments with the NBA and the French national team. Thank you for everything," end quote. He helped the Spurs win 4 titles, was selected to 6 All-Star games, and was the 2007 NBA Finals MVP. The 37-year-old Parker retires with 1,254 regular season games played, averaging 15.5 points, 5.5 assists, and 2.7 rebounds per game. Chris, is he a top 3 point guard of all time?
Of all time? No. Not of all time. He's very good.
Is he top 5?
No.
No.
Tony is infuriated with my question.
Yeah, I think you're getting him way too high up there. I mean, point guard, like, of all time.
I guess maybe growing up, I just knew a lot about Tony Parker
because
he was
very
everywhere.
Good.
He played with Tim Duncan and a whole bunch
he's
of
very
range
good,
of-
but he's nowhere near as good of a point guard as at least a dozen guys.
No, he's not in the top 5. I don't even know if he's in the top 7.
Top 10.
Or the top 10.
Nope.
He lost points for me the way he did Kawhi. He was one of the main people questioning his injury and
you're right,
saying
did.
That he had a similar injury and it shouldn't take this long. So I'm off Tony Parker, honestly.
Interesting.
Not a Tony Parker fan either. Nadal leads all time against Federer 24-15.
Wow, that's a big
and
margin.
And in Grand Slam tournaments... 10-3. I'm just saying, it doesn't mean
it's
he's
a lot
better
closer
than Federer,
than I thought it was,
but
for sure.
Nadal has a lot better resume
and he's humble.
Than you think. He's a very humble guy. They both should be there. They're both the two greatest players of all time. There you go. There's
good stuff, guys.
All right, we're going to get to break. Show continues when we get back. Tony Gwynn Jr. and Chris Ello.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Chris, 97.3, fan.
Well, I didn't see him over by the buzzer, so I also giving him extra half seconds.
And that means whatever they want.
Come on, don't get weird.
They bring you their top five of the day because it's time to start the countdown.
All right, Scraby's idea for the countdown was questionable at best.
Wait. I got no feedback from you guys, so I thought maybe you guys liked it.
I gave it my best shot.
Your tone of your email was a little strong, so I was like, you know what, I'm going to leave this one alone.
Well, I'm just happy you read the email, to be honest.
Scraby thinks since the Warriors are facing elimination tonight, we ought to do the five greatest elimination games in the history of sports. So we're going to give it our best shot. Now, one of the things that I have a problem with on this particular countdown, but maybe Tony doesn't.
I mean, yes.
No, let me just explain.
Okay.
Every NFL playoff game is an elimination game.
Touché.
Right? Every single one.
I think there's bigger stakes than others.
What? Okay.
Because if you're eliminated...
How could you put an NFL playoff game on this countdown is what I'm saying. Because if you included NFL and said those are elimination games, then every single one of these would be the five greatest NFL games ever played because they're all elimination games in the playoffs.
I think that if you lose in a wild card round, it doesn't hurt as bad as if you lost in an NFC
championship. What if you win a wild card round and it ends up taking you all the way to the Super Bowl because you survived and won a great wild card
game,
like the Buffalo Bills that one time?
That counts. I don't want to hear about the crybaby teams who lost in the wild card, okay?
Well, I'm just asking you. The other thing is every game seven is an elimination game for both teams.
Why is this so hard?
Well, the question is, do you include game sevens in this?
Of course! Every elimination game.
Every elimination game ever played is an elimination game.
Even the game we used to play on this show, Elimination. No,
I
got that.
Well, then I'm going to have to change my list a little bit. Because
I'm sorry to cut you off. Let's make it easy for you. You do what you want to do, and Tony does what he wants to do.
All right. I'm just telling you, I did not include NFL games, and I did not include game sevens. Because I don't consider those elimination games.
Your list is
going to
be fire.
How is that considered elimination? They're both eliminated.
To me, an elimination game is where one team can win the championship, and the other team can be eliminated, as is the case tonight.
Okay. Isn't that a game seven, though?
No.
Oh, not again.
Game
okay,
seven,
right.
Whoever wins
Why
moves
do I
on.
Open my mouth?
Well, that's
we question that pretty much on a daily basis.
Right.
Whose laugh was that? Was that?
It was yours. I don't know what's going on with my mouth right now.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I got you.
Yeah, that was definitely Scraby.
Chris is up first.
All right, number five.
Number five.
Is game six of the 1975 World Series. It's an elimination game. It's generally regarded as one of the greatest baseball games played in the history of the sport.
I can hear your annoyance with me, but don't allow me to annoy you.
Well, it's too late. Boston Red Sox were down 3-2 to the Cincinnati Reds. It was at Fenway Park. Bernie Carbo tied it with a 3-run homer in the eighth. And the Red Sox staved off elimination on Carlton Fisk's dramatic home run in the 13th inning, in which he waved the ball fair, and it hit the foul pole and sent that World Series to a Game 7. The only reason it's number 5 on my list is because the Red Sox did not cash in the next game. They lost Game 7, and the Reds won the World Series. But that, as an elimination game, was one of the greats.
I do love that.
All right.
All right, number 5 for me is the 1998 Finals. NBA Game 6, Utah versus the Bulls. Bulls go into this game down at the fourth quarter. I think Jordan and Malone combined something for like 70-something points in this game. The Bulls, obviously, because they never lost the Finals, would go on to win it. This was Michael's last year, wasn't it?
In Chicago.
Last year in Chicago.
It was a great ending to the game. The Bulls were down by 3 points.
The iconic little brush away from Mr. Russell. What was this? I almost called him Jim
Byron.
Russell. Byron Russell.
Yeah.
Pushed him off.
Or Brian Russell.
And then held the pose.
Yeah. But what happened right before that? He stole the ball from Carl Malone at the other end.
That's right. That's
to set
right.
it up. Okay, that was an elimination game. No question. Jazz faced elimination and were eliminated. Number four for me is Game 6 of the 2002 NBA Western Conference Finals. This is a notorious game. The team facing elimination that night was the Los Angeles Lakers. They were facing the Sacramento Kings. In the fourth quarter of this game, the Lakers, trailing, made only five baskets. Certain doom. Except for the fact that the officials called like 100 straight fouls on the Kings, sent the Lakers to the free throw line 21 times, and the Lakers won the game, then went on to win the series. To this day, people in Sactown think they had that game taken away from them. And, you know, the famous official Tim Donaghy actually came out and said that he knew that game was fixed. Now, he is obviously not a very good source, but that's what he said.
You know, his name pops up in a lot
way
of big-time
moments. Yeah, I know. But anyway, that game, I don't remember it that well, Tony, and I'm sure you probably remember it a little differently because you were rooting for the Lakers to win it. But the Sacramento people swear that for some reason the officials just went crazy on the calls against the Kings in the fourth quarter, and the Lakers did shoot 21 free throws in one quarter to win the game. There you go.
Indeed they did.
Okay.
Number four for me, the 1988 finals. Game 6. Isaiah Thomson. Sprained ankle.
But I think it was Isaiah Thomas.
What did I say?
You said Thompson.
Oh, Isaiah Thomas. Excuse me. Isaiah Thomas.
I know you know.
Put up 43 points, 8 assists on that sprained ankle.
25 in the fourth quarter. In the third quarter.
25 in the third quarter, erasing a 7-point deficit at halftime.
Yeah.
But it wasn't enough. The Lakers would go on to win anyway, despite the unbelievable performance by Isaiah Thomas.
They won on a hook shot by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who was fouled on the play by Bill Laimbeer.
Of course, Bill's always fouled.
And Bill Laimbeer, to this day, swears he didn't touch him. And we don't believe you, Bill, because
right.
You're a liar and you always fouled everybody.
Pretty much.
Number three for me is going to be Game 5 of the 2016 NBA Finals. Cleveland Cavaliers at Golden State Warriors. Warriors celebrating, getting ready to win another championship. Except LeBron James and Kyrie Irving both go off for 41 points. The only time in finals history that two teammates have both scored 40. The Cavaliers not only win Game 5 to stave off elimination, but win Game 6 and 7 to take their first and only championship.
No need for me to go because that is exactly what my number three is.
All right. Very good.
Number two.
On 2004, ALCS, Game 4. Yankees lead the Red Sox 3-0. Red Sox facing elimination, bottom of the ninth inning, down a run against Mariano Rivera. Pinch runner, Dave Roberts.
Oh, yes.
Steals second base.
Huge.
Does anybody even remember who knocked him in?
I do.
I do, too, but most people don't. Nope. Most people don't. They just remember Dave Roberts stole second. The bottom, the big deal was somebody had to knock him in.
Does our resident Sox fan know?
Nixon?
It was not.
Oh!
You're not much of a Red Sox fan if you don't know that it was Bill Miller.
That's right.
Who got the base hit to knock in Dave Roberts. Tied
batting
the game.
Champion.
Look, right. Look at him.
Yeah,
he's nodding his head like, oh, yeah.
I remember now.
Just lost all kinds of points in Boston right now.
Yeah. Look at him. He's about to cry.
Boston fans are upset with Thomas right now.
And with what happened with Big Poppy, you think you should know.
Yeah. And on this day,
you ain't a real Red Sox fan.
Let me just add that that on this day where we think of Big Poppy and hope he's okay, he hit the game-winning home run later in Game 4, had the game-winning hit in Game 5. Red Sox came back from 3-0 down and won the series.
Do you know who got the walk to put Dave Roberts on?
No, well, you don't get a chance.
You
don't get to redeem
too
yourself,
late.
Buddy.
You don't get to redeem.
Move on.
No redeeming.
It was Kevin Millar.
Kevin Millar.
Okay.
All right. Was this number two?
Yeah.
Yeah, my number two is the 2001 NLDS Game 5.
2000 what year?
2001.
Okay.
Kurt Schilling. I'm sorry. I'm Wrong one. Sorry, 2011. Chris Carpenter, Roy Halladay, Game 5. This World Series run for the Cardinals doesn't happen without this game. Halladay gave up a leadoff triple and then gave up nothing else for 8 innings. Carpenter, on the other hand, never slipped. He tossed a 3-hit shutout in a 1-0 win.
Mm.
The Cardinals would obviously go on to win the World Series that year. Tremendous pitching performance. Chris Carpenter was tough.
Chris Carpenter was a tough cookie.
He was tough, man.
Tough.
Not a fun at bat for a young 23, 24-year-old.
Number one.
The number one greatest elimination game in sports history is Game 6 of the 1986 World Series. May he rest in peace. But this was the game that Bill Buckner had the ball go through his legs. But that's not really why it was. It was because the Red Sox hadn't won the World Series in 70 years. And Tony, they were leading 5-3 with 2 outs and the bases empty in the bottom of the 9th inning. And up on the scoreboard at the old Shea Stadium, it actually flashed for a second. Congratulations, 1986 World Series champion Boston Red Sox.
Mm.
And then they took it down real fast. And then the Mets got hit, wild pitch, error, won the game, as you know, and then went on the next to win Game 7.
So why aren't we blaming the scoreboard operator then?
I know. Bill Buckner was not the sole blame here, and we've said that many times.
That is a jinx and a half.
I'd say so.
It's a half.
All right, my number
jinx.
One took place in 1984 right here in San Diego.
Oh,
Steve Garvey comes up against the Chicago Cubs. One man on, I believe, or two men on?
One man on.
One man on. Padres, one out away from being eliminated. Steve Garvey goes Oppo Taco at the Murph. And there will be a tomorrow.
That's how the call went. Drysdale said. There will be a tomorrow. That was his famous call.
Great.
What a night that was for Garvey. He
I'm getting goosebumps talking about it.
He did that 4 times in the game. Every time he came up, they were behind, and he got a hit to tie the game up. And then his last time, he won it with that classic moment.
Beautiful.
Good one, Tony.
Thank you.
There they are. Greatest elimination games of all time.
The countdown is now closed.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.